Everything was looking good. We had a stable heart rate. We had normal testing come back. And then we got to our 20-week anatomy scan, which we were excited for. Started at her feet, and then they moved kind of up to her head, and the ultrasound tech got quiet. Her eyes kind of lowered, and then she turns off the monitor completely and looks at me and Bryce and says, I need to go get your OB. She came with this pamphlet, and I'm just like kind of in an immediate state of shock. Then she gets to our next steps, and I'm like, hold on, like, what next steps? Like, what do you mean? Like, this baby is not going to survive. So it feels less icky to see the word now than it did when I was grieving. But I remember those first few days where I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that's not what I'm doing.
Right.
Like, I'm not aborting my baby.
Right.
Like, she just can't live. Baby. Yeah. She can't live outside my womb, and I can't live if she stays in there.
Hey guys, my name is Shayla. Welcome to the Hey Shayla podcast. I went from full-time travel to full-time new COVID mom, and now I'm a mom of two. And holy wow, is motherhood and adulting a learning curve? There are so many decisions we need to make and a million ways to do it right. I created this podcast to interview some of my gurus to share their knowledge and empower you on your journey. Let me be your guinea pig and ask the questions you think everyone else knows. Here, we're a little hippie. We try to do things as naturally as possible. We're open-minded, and we don't take ourselves too seriously. But above all, we support one another and work to find what works. If you're into it, you're our people. Let's get started. All right. Hey guys, welcome back to the Hey Shayla podcast. Today I have Emily. Emily is a relentless advocate for comprehensive reproductive rights and has testified in support of this cause to local and state governments in her home state of Minnesota, our home state of Minnesota. Emily is a mama who's experienced a live birth with her son, Bodhi, a TMFR, which is terminating for medical reasons with her first baby at 20 weeks after a neural tube defect diagnosis and two first trimester miscarriages. So you've had, let's see, four pregnancies?
Yes, I've had four pregnancies.
One live birth with your son, Bodhi. How old is he right now?
He's going to be two in March, which is crazy.
And such a fun age. So you have been, you've been through a lot of different pregnancy scenarios. And so I want to talk to you today about all of them, but specifically your first in regards to the TMFR, which is, like I said, terminating for medical reasons. I also have a little sidekick here. So you might hear some cooing or racketing from the baby until Seth gets here. So if you want to follow Emily on social, it's Emily K. Richter, R-I-C-H-T-E-R. So Emily, thank you for being on the podcast today to talk about this. I was talking to you before the recording and I'm like, this is kind of controversial. So it's a little bit touchy to talk about. You are very open, which is one reason why I was like, yeah, let's do this, because I feel like it's just a like we said, pro-choice or pro-life. It's a situation that can happen to anybody. And so I kind of want you to just tell us about your experience and how this all happened. And yeah, let's just start there.
Great. Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks for having me on. I also love that you have a little sidekick today. It's like ultimate mom status. She's got markers in her mouth.
Yeah.
It's great.
I know. I might have to mute occasionally if she starts to babble.
Be a child.
Yeah, exactly.
So my husband and I have always wanted to have kids in our family. We knew about 4 years ago we wanted to start trying. And so we did, which feels, weird in itself to like spend your whole adult life trying to not get pregnant and then just like completely shift that mentality to trying to create a life. But we got pregnant relatively easily and I didn't know what I didn't know. I was a naive first time pregnant mama and had a very low risk pregnancy. I was 32 at the time. So not in the quote unquote geriatric range that lots of us are in now. And didn't really have any complications. Everything was looking good. We had a stable heart rate. We had normal testing come back. And then we got to our 20-week anatomy scan, which we were excited for. Opted out of some of the genetic testing. We didn't necessarily care to find out the sex. But I was excited to go to that scan because I knew we'd find out she was a girl. Like I knew she was a girl. I had this just deep, deep feeling that I was carrying a girl. Oh, and we got there and anyone who's been in one of those scans, it's comprehensive, it's long. But they kind of started at her feet and like looked anatomically at everything and got to her genitalia and told me it was a girl. And we were so excited. And then they moved kind of up to her head. And anyone who's been in an ultrasound that is anything but normal or typically developing knows this look. And the ultrasound tech got quiet and her eyes kind of lowered and they can't tell you anything.
They can't. And that's the worst.
It's the actual worst. Yes. And I could feel it, but I didn't know what I didn't know. Like, yeah, I thought this is a typically developing pregnancy. We're past the quote 12-week miscarriage. Mm-hmm. Like, whew, we're great. We've got normal heart rates. This is just like a fun scan.
Yeah.
And she's spending a lot of time around baby's head and around baby's heart. And then she turns off the monitor completely and looks at me and Bryce and says, I need to go get your OB. And
that gave me chills. Are you kidding?
Like what felt like
hours,
days, like hours. And she came back in with this pamphlet about neural tube defects, which was like literally not on my radar outside of it's on the cover of your prenatal. Like, great, take this folic acid to help prevent neural tube defects. And she's explaining to me, and I'm just like kind of in an immediate state of shock and daze. And
is this your OB or is this still the ultrasound lady?
This is my OB now.
Oh, thankfully. Okay.
Yeah. And she explains to me that what they're seeing in our baby is a severe neural tube defect where the top part of the neural tube doesn't fuse. So if the bottom part doesn't fuse, that's spina bifida or results as spina bifida. If the top doesn't fuse, something called anencephaly can happen in the most severe cases. And essentially what that means is the top of the neural tube is open. So everything above the brainstem can't form. Everything above the top of the spine and the base of the brain can't form. So essentially she had an open skull and no brain activity above the brainstem and was just bleeding out into my womb. And diagnosis.
You're gonna make me
This is a diagnosis that is 100% fatal. You can't survive with it. And in some cases, mamas can carry these babies to term and go through a delivery and baby will die within a few hours of birth. But in some very severe cases, like mine was, your womb already starts to kind of go into a state of sepsis because she's bleeding out. Like there's not a closed neural tube and there's not a closed brainstem or skull. So she is essentially growing and dying at the same time in your body. So she's explaining all this to me and Bryce, and we're just like, oh my God. And then she gets to our next steps and I'm like, hold on. Like what next steps? Like, what do you mean? Like this baby is not going to survive. And
oh my God.
And she's like, no, this is 100% fatal. And I was like, well, how accurate can this be?
Yeah, right.
And she's like, we can see this on the ultrasound. And she's showing me the pictures and the diagrams of the research on this neural tube defect. And she's like, to confirm this, we can do amniocentesis, which anyone who's done that knows that it can come with some significant risks, less so now than in earlier years when they weren't doing it assisted by an ultrasound. But she's like, but basically we can take DNA from the womb and you'll be able to see like that this baby has a neural tube defect and it's this. And so we did amniocentesis right there, just like no local numbing or anything.
It's like a huge needle, right?
Yeah, it's like this long.
right.
Your stomach. I'm just like, I feel nothing right now.
Yeah.
And she's like talking me through it. And she's like, typically with a typically developing baby, what we'd pull out is kind of a yellowish, clearish amniotic fluid, like healthy amniotic fluid. And she's pulling out the needle, like retracting the needle. And she's like, it's like blood tinged and it's like brown, dark blood. And she's like, this is not a good sign. You have a really, really severe case. But what happened next was where it became political and what was not on my radar at all. So currently in the state of Minnesota, we have far less restrictive abortion legislation than in many places in the U.S., especially after Roe v. Wade has been overturned. But one thing that is still in effect that I have been working tirelessly with some amazing organizations in Minnesota to help overturn this is what's called state-directed mandated counseling. And essentially it's a sheet of paper and there's bullets on it that has medically inaccurate information that's designed to dissuade you from having an abortion in the first place. And
oh, wait, at what point did you say, wait a minute, abortion?
Right then. So,
okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's filled with really politicized information that your medical provider, so whether that's your OB or your general practice physician or whomever, your midwife, is required by law to read to you. And then you have to sign before you're able to have an abortion. And on there includes information like you are more likely to have breast cancer after having an abortion. You should know that the father of this baby is required to pay child support if you decide to go through with the pregnancy. You are electing to terminate a life and stop a heartbeat. Just some really heart-wrenching information that just, yeah, deepened the wounds of the information and the diagnosis that we had just received. And so I'm like signing this form, going through the motions. And then she tells me, so the only option for you, sometimes with a diagnosis like this, we can induce labor for a vaginal delivery. And some people choose that in a TMFR situation, depending on the circumstances, which gives them the opportunity to spend time with the baby and to hold the baby and to go through the labor process that they were anticipating in the first place. But for me, my risk of sepsis was so high. And because of the kind of shape and anatomy of her skull, it was not possible to come out of the vaginal canal. Right. So my only quote unquote option was a D&E, which is a second trimester abortion.
And is the vaginal induction also considered an abortion?
It is. Okay. Yes. So under current state law, that those numbers would also show up as a second trimester abortion. So anytime you're inducing for a baby that's not viable with life or a baby that's before viability, so before 24-ish weeks, it's considered, for insurance purposes, for legal purposes, an abortion. And so that's what I was having, even though this was a very wanted pregnancy.
Right.
I believe in the women's right to choose, but I was never thought I'd find myself in a position where I would be having an abortion. And so here I was. And the next information she told me was that we would have to wait 24 hours to schedule our abortion. And this is another time when this medical care is completely politicized in many states, including Minnesota. And that 24-hour waiting period is designed to give you time to think about your decision and to essentially dissuade you from getting it in the first place. But it only delays care and furthers complications and puts mothers at risk. So my diagnosis came in on a Friday, and my OB's office is closed on the weekends. So that brought me all the way to Monday to be able to even schedule my abortion. And by the time I was able to schedule it on Monday, the first time they could get me in was the following Thursday. So that sent me in almost a 6-day long tailspin of this limbo state. Like, my baby is in there. My husband's watching for signs of sepsis in me. I'm not supposed to leave the state just in case something goes awry. And I'm traveling in a state that has abortion restrictions at this gestation. Like, it just all felt politically icky. And on top of the fact that we had just found out that our first baby was not going to live.
And you're grieving. And you're probably angry about the situation and you're scared. Why sepsis?
Just because she's like essentially slowly dying in
your
my
body's
womb
okay.
and bleeding out. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the case with lots of, I mean, even miscarriages or if a baby dies in utero, like you're.
That's what happened with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had the same thing at 11 weeks. We went in and found out that there was no baby. I had a blighted ovum, so the baby just stopped growing. But we were in Washington, and I have no idea what the abortion. I honestly didn't know that because I had a DNC as well, because I went septic, or my uterus was septic, and had a DNC in the hospital. And then recently, like since I think Esme was born, on my paperwork it said abortion, and I was like, "What?" I
know. Yeah, which they also don't prepare you for. Like, we're getting insurance paperwork in the mail, and it's like, second trimester elective abortion. I remember opening that and being like, punch in the gut. Like, that's not what this was. Right. I mean, it is, right. But it's also, and I think what I've tried to embrace, so this was in 2020, what I've tried to embrace in these last 3 years is like, yes, this was an abortion, and it's such a politicized term, and myself included had this stigma around what it is and why you would get it. And I just felt like if you were terminating for medical reasons or you had no other choice, then it shouldn't be called that. But I'm trying to embrace the fact that this is just medical care, and it's necessary medical care regardless of the reason why you're having it.
Right.
Yeah. So it feels less icky to see the word now than it did when I was grieving. But I remember those first few days where I'm like, what the like, that's not what I'm doing.
Right.
Like, I'm not aborting my baby.
Right.
Like,
she just can't live. Baby. Yeah.
She can't live outside my womb, and I can't live if she stays in there.
Right. So traumatic. Did you go into any sort of sepsis?
No. No, my husband was like watching for signs of sepsis as I was grieving this child and in limbo, and she was still in my body. But Yeah. So, I mean, abortion wasn't really even on my radar before that. And since then I've just become more immersed in kind of the vernacular of it and what different states are doing and just how threatened our reproductive rights are.
Go ahead.
I think it's such an interesting conversation for anytime you can have it respectfully with anyone. Regardless if you sit in the pro-life camp or the pro-choice camp or somewhere in between, or if this circumstance stands on that, like this, your story could be mine. Like, you could find yourself at 20 weeks at your anatomy scan and require abortion as necessary medical care to save your life. And that is where I was. Or require abortion care to get a non-viable pregnancy, a miscarriage, an ectopic pregnancy, the list goes on, out of your body. And there are so many states, our neighbors in Wisconsin right next door, where there's complete bans. And so women are dying. People
with uteruses
are dying, or they're traveling across state lines. And then that just, once again, affects the more marginalized populations the most. If you don't have the disposable income to travel across state lines or pay out of pocket. Right. Or, I mean, if you live in the deep South, like, you're going 3-4 states over to be able to get abortion care, even if you had a first trimester miscarriage, which is just terrifying.
That's what you would have had. Had your zip code been Wisconsin or a state that didn't have this care, that was your option?
That would be my option today. So many, many more states were protected under Roe v. Wade prior to the fall of that last summer. And especially in times where mother's life was in danger or baby wasn't viable. But when that fell, so did a lot of those protections too. And there's lots of states that I would not have been able to have that care. And I mean, we would have had the privilege to drive and pay out of pocket and dip into savings and all of that. But so many families, that's not a possibility for.
Totally. Did you have to wait till that Thursday? You had to wait those 6 days. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And terrible. How was the staff fine with you?
They were wonderful. Okay. I mean, my OB was amazing. She's like still with me on my journey to this day. And was so empathetic, and the nursing staff, like, everyone was wonderful and knew the circumstances. So it didn't feel politicized once I was in there, but it still felt awful. Like, they did the surgery and labor and delivery. Like, there's happy people with live babies there.
Oh, and man.
We like signed cremation paperwork and left, and I left in a diaper and had similar postpartum bleeding to someone with a full term birth. My milk came in. Like, we all of these postpartum experiences with a baby who didn't make it. And it just felt like another gut punch to this loss for this child that we so, so wanted.
And didn't you say you got mastitis too?
I did. Yeah. It was terrible, which is like, anyone who's had mastitis knows it's the actual worst. My milk came in. I kind of didn't know what was happening. It was my first pregnancy, but I felt engorged and I was leaking. And I read somewhere like to wear a tight bra to like try to dry it up and take Sudafed. And so I was doing all those things, but it was clearly like too much milk and not getting out. So I got an infection, and then I got antibiotics for mastitis. It was also the start of COVID, so it was March 2020. So like everything shut down like right as it happened. I remember when we went in to my anatomy scan ultrasound, they were like putting a sign on the door of the maternal fetal medicine clinic, and they were like, so if you had like, have you traveled outside the state? You should wear a mask. But my husband hadn't traveled. And so they were like, he doesn't need to wear one. Like, nobody knew what to do with the masking situation. Yeah. It was just like so early in pandemic days. So everything kind of shut down, and that was hard too. Like, we were grieving alone. Like, I didn't get to hug my parents for like 3 months. And yeah, the simple things like people bringing you food and hugging you and like sitting in sadness with you. We grieved so much of that alone, which was just so hard.
You're grieving your postpartum and your hormones are just wackadoo. You're physically recovering from this procedure. Like, you're isolated. Did you get depressed?
Yeah. I mean, they were our darkest days for sure.
I cannot even fathom.
Which I think is why this cause has become so important to me too. It's like, if women, people with uteruses, birthing bodies have to go through this, like, they need support and shouldn't have to like deepen the pain with these politicized laws where lawmakers are literally in the doctor's office with them making these generalizations and medical decisions for their body.
Right. Oh my gosh. I just feel for you. Like, I know postpartum, I know the isolation. I have no idea, like, the grieving. That's too many layers of darkness at once.
Yeah. And you've been through a miscarriage. You know the wanted pregnancy and losing just that day, but then everything, all the future days that would have been too, and all the milestones. All the things. Like, I still think to this day about like how she would interact with Bodhi and like what they would do and like how they'd be fun siblings. And I just think about them growing up together. Like, you don't lose like that
moment.
12-week old baby that stopped growing, or that 20-week old baby that couldn't live outside your body. You lose like everything after a lifetime too.
And I think that's part of the grieving, because you've in your mind, you've already planned like things you're gonna do. You imagine going on walks with them and when they start walking, and then you don't have that. And it's like, you do grieve their entire life. How did you get involved with going to the Capitol?
So they found me on the internet. I've been really open about my story on Fit Foodie Finds, where my day job is, and then on my own personal account. And, when the Supreme Court, brief was leaked, about overturning Roe v. Wade, and we kind of knew that this change was imminent, I just felt so strongly about speaking out about this and having conversations more widely about the fact that this could happen to anyone, that it's, even if you don't think you'd ever have an abortion, this could happen to you, or it could happen to your daughter or your sister or whoever. This story or a story like it could be yours. They found me on the internet, and there's been some amazing work that's been going on in the Minnesota state legislature. This it's February right now. So honestly, just through the start of 2023. So in January, Governor Walz signed abortion, the right to abortion, into Minnesota state constitutional law. So this, we've already been protected with a Supreme Court case in the state of Minnesota that protects the right to abortion, but this enshrines it in constitutional law, which we're the first state to do this. And this is amazing. Oh, wow. And we are an oasis in the upper Midwest, surrounded by kind of very abortion restricted states. So we will be kind of this island for people who can afford to come right. get care here when they need it. But then there's some additional legislation that they're working on getting through. And one of those is overturning the things that I went through. So the 24-hour waiting period and the state-directed counseling, and some of the other elements in there include needing dual parental consent for an abortion under 18 years of age. And again, this like completely affects marginalized communities more. So if you don't know your dad, don't have a relationship with him, were raped by your dad, and that's why you're pregnant in the first place, you still need, currently under Minnesota state law, you need mom and dad's approval.
Your parents' approval.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, there's some really important work that they're doing to get elements of these, essentially taking politics out of abortion medical care, like treating it as true medical care,
right.
life-saving medical care that it is. And so yeah, that is still forthcoming, hopefully this spring. But yeah, Minnesota is making some huge strides.
Are they trying to distinguish between an elected because I want to have an abortion and a TMFR?
I think some states are. Minnesota is not. I think what another thing lots of people don't know is that the vast majority, 90%+ of abortions happen in the first trimester. So the first 12 weeks, it's like 80 some happen in the first 8 weeks. So a lot of these abortions are medication abortion. So they're not even surgical abortion. The small minority happen in the trimester, the second trimester, and I'm one of them. And the majority of those are because of terminal diagnoses, genetic anomalies, mom's life is in danger, something like that. And I think one of the pillars of the pro-life contingent is that abortion laws allow people to terminate a baby like right up to 40 weeks. And that is just categorically false. That is not happening. Nobody's walking into Planned Parenthood at 38 weeks like, I don't want to be pregnant anymore. Less than 1% of abortions happen in the third trimester, and all of those cases are because baby's not viable or mom's life is in danger. So I think there's definitely a common misconception and incorrect rhetoric around around that.
Yeah. What do you know of any resources or like things that helped you if someone else is going through this? Because I feel like it's, unless you find someone like you who's very open about it,
it's so common for family members to either not be supportive of abortion when you're in this situation. So let's say you've had an ectopic pregnancy or you've had a miscarriage, or you're facing financial constraints and for whatever reason you needed an abortion. I think that would have furthered the pain of this if I didn't have my family and like loved ones' support.
Yeah.
So even just education around what abortions can look like, that it can be people like us who have had miscarriages or people who have very wanted pregnancy. More than half of people who get abortions already have a child. So lots of times these are wanted pregnancies. And I think the more we can talk about it, the less stigma there is around this medical care, because I can't imagine having gone through this and having my parents tell me I was going to hell, you know, or that this was immoral or whatever the case may be. In terms of resources, Unrestrict Minnesota, they're a nonprofit here in Minnesota, obviously, and they do a lot of work, a lot of lobby work for reproductive rights, and they do a lot of education around what abortion is and the safety of it and what it looks like. So they were really helpful. Honestly, like the internet is such a big but small world. The first time I literally had never heard the word anencephaly when we got that diagnosis. And it's very rare, but I've met people on the internet who have had similar diagnoses. So even just talking about it with other people who have been there in similar circumstances, even if I've never met them in real life, was been right. so comforting. Like just to talk, to hear someone or to see a message from someone and be like, I know this fucking sucks. Like I'm not going to try to fix it, but it's like you have somebody on the other side of the world who's walked this road too. Yeah. And even, yeah, I think knowledge is power and we're all better for storytelling. So the more I've talked about my story, the more I've come across just amazing people who have gone through similar or very different losses. And we can just kind of find common ground in that world.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I feel like when I had my miscarriage, just getting on YouTube and watching other people talk about their miscarriages and then realizing that video was 4 years old and that they now had a couple kids or whatever. Yeah. I was like, okay, life will go on.
Yeah.
I will go on. Everything. It's not okay right now, but it will be okay.
Yep.
And just like talking to other people, especially with miscarriage, because I feel like people are so, I honestly don't understand the whole, like, don't tell anybody until you're 12 weeks.
Because, I know.
Right. Like, wait,
because then you're like catching them up on the fact that you were pregnant, but now you're not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually the worst. It's so horrible. And but the more that you do talk about it, the more you find other people go, yep, 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 yep. And like, so many people have experienced it. And it's just, even this, I read that 25% of women before they're 45 will have an abortion.
Yeah.
Does that sound like a rights? Does that sound accurate to you? And that's the same as a miscarriage rate. So that's a lot of women who are experiencing this. But with a miscarriage, I feel like there's not as much shame. With this, you're like,
yep,
I can't share that this happened because I had an abortion and there people can't. And then you have to explain the whole thing instead of just getting the support that you need.
Yep. Completely. Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, our diagnosis was black and white. Like she would 100% chance not survive outside the womb, but sometimes people get really, really gray area diagnoses where baby could have a sort of okay quality of life or baby could die in the vaginal canal. Like I so sympathize with people who have those decisions in front of them because that would be so hard. And to then have the stigma of abortion being the medical care that they quote chose or required is just gut-wrenching, you know? Yeah,
totally. And I feel like there's always a, I don't know, part of me says like, we've all experienced loss. We all have that heartache. We know. And there's like a unity in that. But like for me, I'm like, well, you had a 20 week. Yours is, your loss is worse than mine. Oh my
God, we could talk for hours about the hierarchy of loss. Like
that
people don't know what to say when you lose a baby. Like if you lose your husband or you lose a friend or your mom, like they're like, we're so sorry for your loss. But like the shit people say when you lose a baby is like platitudes. Like, I'm so glad this didn't happen later in your pregnancy. Right. Everything happens for a reason. Yeah. It's a lot worse stuff that you would never say to someone if they lost a loved one.
Right.
But like I think the hierarchy of loss in the like miscarriage, baby loss, infant loss, TMFR, stillbirth, all the cool clubs that we're so fortunately a part of. That's so hard because it's all different, but it all hurts. And it doesn't, like 8 weeks is 20 weeks is 35 weeks is whatever.
But even like what you just said, your diagnosis was black and white and you can't imagine somebody who had a gray one. And I'm like,
exactly.
What? And I agree. There are different levels, but I think that everybody knows that feeling of the same thing we just talked about, the whole lifelong, the grieving of the entire life. Which is
completely. Yeah. Yeah. So that's universal.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then you got pregnant with Bodhi. How was that?
Terrifying.
Yeah.
I found out that I was pregnant with Bodhi. Our baby girl's due date was August 10th. And we found out we were pregnant with Bodhi that same week. So it felt so high and low. Like we were so thrilled to be pregnant, but still grieving. Like that, it felt like I know most kids aren't born on their due dates, but it felt like we're pa- like the passing of her due date was like, okay, it's officially over. Like she can't be born alive. Like we're past her gestation, all of that. So yeah, it felt really heavy, but also light because we had this little baby growing inside of me, but I was so anxious. Like I still, looking back on it, I felt outside my body. Like I'm watching this person just try to not break the baby inside of her for 10 months.
Oh my gosh. Like,
keep the baby alive somehow. Like any of this is any of our faults. And I know
exactly.
Like, miscarriage camp can relate to this too. Like you're just walking on eggshells waiting for the next horrible thing. And it was still COVID. So like, I went into all my appointments alone. I remember I went in for my first ultrasound and I like threw up in the it threw up in the trash can like before she started the scan. And then I just broke down and like she was wonderful and I told her my story and they were like so supportive in that. But like pregnancy after loss is not for the faint of heart. Like it is so hard.
And you don't expect it.
Yeah.
I feel like you don't expect it until you actually see that positive test and then you're like, I was like, I remember with Aaliyah, Steph was like, how do you feel? And I was like, terrified and a little bit dreadful. Yeah. Like I'm
dreading like filled with dread. Yes.
Yes. And then you feel terrible about that because there's this new baby, but you're still like, oh, and for you, I mean, you got knocked over the side of the head 20 weeks in. It wasn't like a, well, you're kind of high risk for these things. So keep that on your radar. We'll check it. It was like, nope, everything's super duper duper. No, it's not. Boom. And then just like,
no, it's actually really not.
Pregnancy after loss is a whole new thing. And I feel it. When did you feel when he was in your, like, at what point were you like, okay.
Like when they laid him on my chest.
Yeah.
Literally. Like I was still, and I think it's hard too, because you're also managing like other people's emotions. Like everyone was so excited for us. And I was like, but please don't get excited. Like we're not excited. We want that. We want this, but like I can't be in that space right now.
Yeah. I can't be let down again.
It just felt hard. Like we didn't do a baby shower. I was like, we're not having one till after baby's here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want any of that. Like, don't get me stuff. We put together our nursery like 3 days before my water broke. Like I couldn't do it. Like I couldn't put it all up and then have to like take it down if something happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, especially during that time, like therapy was huge.
Yes.
I went on an SSRI, like I got on an anti-anxiety med, like did really important work, but it wasn't easy. Like I just felt so anxious. I felt so anxious and I felt so jealous of people who could enjoy their pregnancy and like were excited. Oh, you know, like, and you don't know what you don't know. And everybody's journey is different. But I don't know if you can relate to that too, where people are like lighthearted and free and like, oh, this baby in September, they're going to be blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they might die.
Yep.
Like, I'm real fun at a party right now.
Really? Like, it's trauma. That's so traumatic. And for me, because I was going through therapy too, it was like, I didn't really want to hear congratulations. Like when you're telling people, you're like, oh, we're pregnant. They're like, oh my gosh, congratulations. Exactly what you just said. Yeah. Let's just lower the excitement for a minute. Mm-hmm. We got to hit a couple milestones first. For me, once I passed the point that I had the miscarriage, I felt better.
Yeah.
So once I passed that 13 weeks and not even because it was the end of the third or second trimester, but because I passed my milestone. Yes.
Completely.
Then I was like,
so
okay,
was your miscarriage before Aaliyah?
Yes.
Okay.
So I had two, I had one at 13 weeks before Aaliyah. And then I had another one like six weeks shortly after that one. And then I had Aaliyah and then Esme was a twin.
What?
Yeah. So she,
oh,
but
I did
that
not
was,
know that.
No. And that was very early too. We were at like our 6 week ultrasound or something. And they're like, well, you were pregnant with twins. There's two sacs here, but this one there is not viable. And this one is. And I was like,
okay.
Yeah. So is that a miscarriage or like what?
Yeah.
Like,
so then what happened? Did like the,
it was so early. So it was just a sac.
Just
so
absorbed.
I imagine. Yeah. And that's kind of what happened with the 13 week. It was a blighted ovum. So at some point something didn't produce correctly.
Like the cells didn't multiply. Like yep. there's so much that can go right during pregnancy, but there's so much that can go yes. wrong. Like,
and I,
the amount of like cell multiplication and division that has to happen, like the right cocktail of things. Like yes. it's a miracle that anyone can be born. Like
it is
with it, all their parts.
Yes. And it's crazy. And I just like with that, we went in at like, cause we moved. So we went into the like ultrasound and I can't remember at what week, but I want to say like 8 weeks. And then we were going to leave like the next week. And he's like, well, I'm measuring small. So you might have your due date off. And then we moved across the country to Washington State, went down to San Francisco, where like celebrating with my family, went back up to the whatever, went to our first ultrasound. And my uterus was literally the size of 13 weeks. The midwife is feeling around. She's like, yeah, it feels like how it's supposed to feel, but she couldn't find a heartbeat. Yeah. And she's like, I'm going to have you go in for an ultrasound. Shows my uterus, nothing inside. And it's like, wait, what? So my hormones. So then I just got angry. I was like,
yeah,
because I mean, you know, the hormones, your body still does all the things.
And like you went through the whole worst part, the first trimester.
Yeah. Oh,
that feels like such a defeat too. You're like, damn it. I just got through like the hardest part and now yes. I just start over.
Yes. The only thing I can compare that to, I used to play like Super Mario Brothers. And when you like lose the game and it was like game over,
you go, and you're like all the way back to the beginning.
So that, and then it was, I had three choices. I could either take a pill that would have everything kind of like go out. I could wait it out and just do it naturally and just have the miscarriage whenever it came, or I could go for the DNC.
If it did come. Yeah, totally.
Right. So I did have some sort of miscarriage happen, but apparently not all of it came out. And my midwives were just like, yeah, just keep an eye on sepsis. And I'm like, okay. And they're like,
what does that mean?
Right. Yeah. And so
just make
like,
sure you don't fall septic. Like it's not a big deal.
Yeah. And I didn't even really know that sepsis was like life-threatening. I was just like, okay, cool. Sepsis. All right. So, or infection, they said, watch for an infection. So they were like, any foul smell, any fever, any abdominal pain. Well, I had back pain, but I didn't have abdominal pain. So I was like, oh, that's weird. Just kind of
must be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had the chills two nights in a row. Didn't know that that was like accompanied with fever. Didn't know that that was the same thing. And then I called my midwife and I was like, dead animal smell. Like it is foul. Oh, yeah. Foul. And she's like, well, smell is subjective. So that wasn't, yeah. She's like, smell subjective. So that's not really a tip off. So keep an eye out for like a fever. So finally I'm like shivering now, not just at night, like all day. And we went into the ER and they're like, yeah, your uterus is septic. We need to get you like,
that's so scary.
A DNC. I didn't even know it was scary. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And they're like, have you eaten anything recently? I was like, I just had soup on the way here. And they were like, what? If you ever come to the ER.
Put you under.
Yeah. They didn't do it. So they waited till the morning to be able to do it because I had eaten soup, lentil soup. And then I was in the hospital for a couple of days, but like I said, I did not know that that was categorized as an abortion until I had seen it on my paperwork just recently.
Yeah.
Life threatening. Like you, it's wild. It's all wild. And it's things that you do not control and that you have no idea are coming. And to have it be like, oh, sorry, you've got a medical thing that we need to take care of,
but we can't,
we got to wait 24 hours and you need to read about how you're doing this thing that you didn't think you were ever going to do and stomach that. Well, you also grieve your loss.
The loss of your baby.
Thank you.
Completely.
See you next week.
Completely. I mean, you can't have comprehensive reproductive rights and reproductive care without abortion care. And that's regardless if it's if you're terminating a pregnancy because you don't want to be pregnant right now, or it's not right for you in your life, or you have a grave diagnosis, or mom has a grave diagnosis. Like there's so many different reasons that can't be put in these black and white camps of politics. Right. And it's politicized like no other type of medical care. Like if you went into the ER with a broken leg, they wouldn't be like, well, think about your decision, come back in 24. Or nope, you're gonna have to cross state lines, we don't do that here.
Right. Mm-mm.
That's really not something.
And a broken leg isn't even like life threatening,
or a heart attack, or anything like that. Like no, you're gonna have to go somewhere else for this. Like we have laws against this type of care, we won't do that here. Like it's truly treated unlike any other type of medical care.
Oh man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Well, honestly, I appreciate you being so open about it, not just with me, but like to the whole internet and world, because like I said, there is a stigma around it. So to say like, yes, I had a second trimester abortion, and then have everybody freak out and then be like, mm-hmm. cool, you can either freak out or you can continue to listen to my story and let me tell you about this wanted pregnancy that I had that ended in like heartbreak. Yeah.
Yeah. The worst possible outcome.
I just really appreciate you sharing it and going to the Capitol and doing all these things for women. I think it's, I don't want to say admirable, but it's admirable. Like you don't, things you don't want to have to do and talk about.
Thank you. Yeah.
Were people awful?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, there were great people there, but like, yeah. I mean, signs of dead fetuses and
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Somebody whispered as I went past that I killed my baby. Just really triggering things. But I think that's why stories like these are so important, especially now when reproductive rights are threatened. Like these are all of our friends and their family and their neighbors, and they're people who need medical care, and their stories are important. It's not black and white. It's not. And so I hope that by sharing what has happened to us and how it's affected our family and how these laws impacted us here in Minnesota shed some light on what abortion can look like and the necessary space for it in comprehensive medical care.
Absolutely. Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me.
Yeah. Thank you for having this conversation. I appreciate you and just everything you talk about so much.
Good. Amazing. If anybody wants to find you, they can go to Emily K. Richter.
Yep.
Or Fit Foodie Finds.
Yeah, come see us. Get some good recipes at Fit Foodie Finds or our very cheesy site, the Cheese Knees.
Oh, the Cheese Knees makes me sad because I'm lactose intolerant.
I know. I'm so sorry.
But you can't stop it for me. Those cheese lovers need it. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, please share with somebody you think would love. And I would be so honored if you would subscribe to the podcast and leave a comment and rating below so I can know what you guys are digging, what you want more of, just connect with you a little better. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.